Ancast is brought to you by RightStuffAnime.com. Check out some great deals on anime, manga, merchandise, figures, and more at RightStuffAnime.com. Disclaimer: the views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in the show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show! Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. Jacob's here.
Hello.
Boy, sorry about last week. We were supposed to have a show, but there was an electronic hum that introduced itself. I have kind of a complicated setup to tape this show. It's my computer's audio is fed through a mixer and then back into my computer. Then we have microphones attached to that mixer and everything. And like every now and then, and the cat sleeps on the mixer, of course, right? So every now and then, like a little electronic hum will kind of come in, and I'll have to sort of go through wires and find out what's faulty. It doesn't happen that often, but it totally happened last week. And so we had to throw that audio out. We're actually re-recording it, which is fine with me, because, you know, it's been an eventful week. There's more to talk about, I think.
Right, I think
so. So, you know, good times. How you doing?
Pretty good.
I ask you that like I don't know.
Yeah, we talk to each other so rarely.
Yeah, right. Just live and work together. No time to catch up, really, when you think about it. We're going to talk a little bit about criticism this week and just kind of a couple of general things. Take some Twitter questions. There's a little bit of site news. So spring preview is probably a month away, right? What do you think? You excited?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff that looks interesting. There's a lot of ambitious and, like, popular projects. Like, I say popular, I mean, like, properties people care about, like My Hero Academia and Phoenix Wright and stuff like that, and JoJo's getting bumps, and so that, and then there's, like, also some weird ambitious stuff. I know that, Ichiro Okuchi is back in town, so that's gonna be something.
And, right.
Right. Well, I forgot the director. There's also a super, like, well-known director who's directing his thing. I want to say it's the, I want to say it's Kill la Kill and Gurren Lagann guy, but I don't remember. So, either way, it's a bunch of, like, creatives that are doing stuff.
It looks like season with a lot of potential hits and stuff to get excited about, and that's cool.
Uh-huh.
Like, I there's plenty of stuff I'm looking forward to. Admittedly, the thing I still want to see... Haven't you heard I'm Sakamoto the most?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the one I'm the most excited about. I don't know why. The premise is very funny to me.
Is that
so.
Going to be a short or like a...
I have no idea.
Because you told me the premise and I'm like, sounds like a short.
The manga could totally be... It could kind of go either way. Mm-hmm. We'll see. Maybe it's a short. Whatever. I'm still looking forward to it. It doesn't matter if it's short or long.
No, see? I was just curious. I was like, yeah. It sounds like it would work really well in like 7-minute chunks.
That that Kuma Shrine Girl thing looks really cute.
Bears.
Yeah, man, that looks cute. Yeah, there's stuff I'm excited about. And some potential hits, and that's exciting for us and everything. So, you know, good times. Good times, I think. That'll be a real busy time because we've also got Anime Japan happening then. SakuraCon's right around then. So the end of this month, oh boy, it's going to be... a fun time.
Yeah.
A fun time. It's all right. We're ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
So before we get into anime, and I haven't had time to watch too much anime lately, a few things, mostly for the show. We saw a few movies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's better because... So last week we recorded this show after we had gone to the movies, and the movie we saw then was Gods of Egypt.
Yeah.
This week we're taping the show after having gone to the movies, and the movie we saw was Zootopia, which was delightful. So
yeah.
It's much better this time.
It's an upswing. It's like a symbol of our... the preferential second taping.
Yeah, really. So Gods of Egypt, I guess we should talk a little bit about. A lot of people are like, why would you see that? Well, because I am who I am, and like I love bad movies. I really love them. I feel like that's not a secret. I love bad movies almost as much as I love good movies. Like good bad movie, a really good funny bad expensive like over the top, just a bunch of silly decisions. Like a Gods of Egypt type of thing, you know, it's going to be a fun time, right? You're going to go, you're going to have a good time, you make some jokes, you have some laughs. Mm-hmm. Like, you and I have had some of our greatest times together watching bad movies, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we go see bad movies. Gods of Egypt looks spectacularly bad, and it was, but not as bad as you would want.
Yeah, unfortunately not. The first act is
it's bad.
Gloriously bad.
Yeah.
And then the second and third acts have moments of that, but it's not the same. It gets more boring as it goes. It ends on a low note, like, compared to how silly it could have been.
Yeah, the worst thing a bad movie can do like that is get boring.
Right.
And Gods of Egypt gets boring chiefly because it feels like they spent all the money in that movie in the first, like, 45 minutes, like you said.
Yeah.
And those first 45 minutes are hilarious and awesome and amazing. And everyone, it's like a $140 million drag show. Like, everyone is wearing, like, sequined capes and, like,
bejeweled. This completely inexplicable thing where you can tell the gods are different from people because they bleed gold, which, okay, sure, it makes sense. It's campy and stupid, but, like, it makes sense. But then this inexplicable decision to... You can tell gods apart from humans because they're literally bigger. So you have the hobbit effect with all the humans, where, like, a normal human is, like, hobbit size, and then any actor playing a god is, like, a weird giant. And it just kind of throws the staging of... Like, this movie is really not well-directed or edited at all, so it throws, the staging of these not-very-good shots off even more to have these size differences. I don't even notice continuity errors and stuff most of the time. Like, I don't, and I don't think it's a big deal. There are continuity errors that you could, like, drive a bulldozer through. It's just very not well-directed movie. Just a mess.
Yeah, the scale thing, honestly, like, I didn't even notice that that's what was supposed to be happening until, like, a third of the way through. Yeah. And I was like, are they bigger than...
They're
supposed to be bigger. And so you can't... And it's some shot... And, like, literally, like, this movie is, like, weirdly, like, over 2 hours long. Mm-hmm. And more than an hour and change of it is just actors standing in front of a green screen, and it's, like, blurry, and, like, you can't... It's kind of hard to tell where they are, I feel... Like, there's a bunch of shit happening in the background. Like, they spend a lot of time in, like, states of limbo and in, like, the middle of a desert. And it's because that stuff is way cheaper to shoot.
Well, the distance between locales and stuff, like, it's supposed to be a quest movie, sort of.
Yeah.
But the distance between locales and spaces and, like, how did somebody get into a building. Like, my favorite thing that I was laughing at in the theater is that there's a scene where they're in this open air. Like, imagine sort of Egyptian style... open air giant columns, you know, like that. They're in this room like this, and then a gust of wind blows the window open on one side of the room, and a guy complains, and he's like, you might learn how to close a window, wench, or whatever, and he goes and closes the window to keep the draft out, and it's like, this is an open air, like, literally one whole wall, maybe two whole walls of this room are missing, and you're like, oh no, the window. Why is there a window with shutters in a giant open-air thing where clearly the breeze would be blowing through it the whole time? It's so stupid. I don't, you know. Anyway.
Look, this is a movie where Gerard Butler, who is playing Set, all this movie is all completely whitewashed and everyone's speaking in transatlantic accents, by the way. So, God. Yeah. So this is where Gerard Butler, playing Set, who's ripping the organs out of all the other gods so that he can create his ultimate Saint Seiya god armor. And they transform her into the Saint Seiya armor. It's really stupid looking. Saint Seiya looks cool. I've always liked the way that stuff looks. This is like, if it didn't look cool.
CG.
Gerard Butler says, I am now lord of all that breathes and all that is breathed on.
It's a great line.
And... that sounds like that movie would be a ton of fun to go see in the theater and laugh and stuff. And it's sadly not worth maybe a dollar rental. Mm-hmm. Or like if it's on cable, you can maybe, you know, get drunk with your friends or something, but not worth a theater trip. So if you're a bad movie person like us and, you know, you were excited by the, you know, crazy looking album cover that was Gods of Egypt, not quite worth it.
No, I definitely recommend it, but I would wait till rental and like be prepared to fast forward through a couple.
Yeah, totally. Having a fast forward pause or whatever, being able to screw with it will be helpful. So the last night we saw Zootopia, which is the new Disney feature animation. So, you know, Disney, Pixar, this is from the Disney side of that, even though, you know, whatever, it's all John Lasseter. Mm-hmm. And I liked it a lot. I was really surprised. I thought it was just going to be like Tiny Toons, furry nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to be getting, I was going to go to the theater and get yiffed.
Oh, no.
And that didn't happen. It was super cute. It was really cute and mostly funny and kind of funny.
Yeah, I liked the character designs, right? I mean, I didn't know what the tone of the movie, really is going to change whether it seems super furry or not. But looking at the character designs, I didn't think it looked super furry. I thought, okay, Disney character animation is a little more informed by, like, animal behavior and stuff like that, and it's a little bit more, like, naturalistic and pet cute, like a nice mix of those, so where it's not, it doesn't have that weird Uncanny Valley DreamWorks furry thing going on. So I was like, okay, well, at least the character designs are good. So the story, you know, we'll see. But the story turned out to be good, too. I as far as, like, tears of animated movie, this is on the level of like Monsters Inc., Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah, I agree.
Level. It's not like one of the big Pixars. It's more Tangled, Wreck-It Ralph, Monsters Inc. is pretty much exactly with the plot of like a Roger Rabbit. But it's more a family movie than it is like an all-ages kind of, like, magical transcendent experience or whatever, but it is good. Like, it's just a really, really good family movie, basically.
Yeah, totally solid. Like, I laughed. I had a great time. I was not expecting... I thought it was just going to be, like, you know, like a slightly better... Because I expect a little bit better from Disney feature animation than I would from, like, DreamWorks or Blue Sky or something where it's like, you know, what if animals were people? And then they have an animal version of Coke and Nike, and it's lazy and hacky and crappy. And this movie did have plenty of that, but it was cute and gentle and funny, and it was fine. Like, tonally, I thought they struck the right tone. It was, like I said, very cute. Mm-hmm.
I actually didn't find the movie funny. Like, comparing it to Monsters, Inc.
I laughed. I mean, I laughed more than you did, so.
Yeah. Well, no,
I'm an easy mark, though.
I'm not saying this is a diss. I'm saying this because I don't think it's actually the movie's strength. The movie does spend long swaths of time on comedy, but I never really laughed. It's not funny. It's like, cute. It's like, aw, that's cute, like a Godfather reference, and it's a shrew, and cute.
Well, that was lame. The Godfather stuff was lame. Yeah.
That was lame, but I pointed that out because I'm like, that's kind of indicative of the humor to me. The sloth scene, which you've seen in the trailers, is longer in the movie. It's they cut it in like half or something.
Man, I got to tell you something. Yeah. I got a tangent here. If you're gonna have a joke like that in your movie, don't make it the trailer.
Yeah.
Because we see the trailer, like, dude, we saw that Zootopia sloth trailer in front of every movie for like 6 months. If I ever see that sloth bit again, and it was funny the first couple times, It ain't funny the 12th time. And that joke by itself, like, imagine having to sit through it over and over again by the nature of that joke. So I'm just saying, like, have mercy. Do not just take a scene and show us that one scene. Because then if we go see your movie, oh gosh, when that scene shows up, you're like, oh.
And like, not just that, it's like the scene is the exact same as it is in the trailer, except it's longer.
It's
there
longer,
are
yeah.
more scenes in there. There are more jokes.
It's just longer,
so,
yeah.
So to me, like, it was kind of weird that the movie was indulging in these comedic bits, because I didn't think they were that funny. They're cute. They're adorable. But they're not funny. Ha-ha. Like, you're not going to, like... They're, like, cute for little kids. But, like... Anyway, my point is, what I thought the strength of the movie was more of the aesthetic, which it's just really nice to look at. It's a really, really beautiful movie with good, like, great production design and a lot of really thoughtful visual cues and, like, you know, the way the animals are animated and the way they look. Like, it's a really good-looking movie. And when it attempts to do the drama, which is mostly all in the third act, like, the movie instantly gets better. The third act is a big jump up from the first two. It was to me, anyway. And it's like, oh, they kind of wanted to make... They wanted to make a little more serious movie. It's still for families, and that's good, and it has a really good message for family audiences. But it's like, oh, they wanted to make this movie about this, and they did, but then there's a bunch of extra time in the movie, front-loaded, that's spent kind of cute, lame comedy. So, like, it was like, oh, we took this long to get to what they kind of really wanted to make. I feel like cartoons are in kind of a weird space now where we are getting more... stuff that's kind of in the middle. It's like made for not quite adults, but not quite children, and it's this weird, like, tone blend that's not really finished maturing yet. Like, I feel like that's happening more and more now, and it's probably going to continue to happen for a while until eventually there are just cartoons made for children and cartoons made for adults, but for a while it's going to be this weird in-between place where... And that's what Zootopia does, like, in the third act, so... Yeah, it was interesting.
I'm not sure that I agree with, like, any of that. Like, you were talking about that a lot last night, and
I was really struck.
I was just like, that was funny and cute, and that's it. Like, so my reading of it was incredibly shallow, but I was totally in the mood to just sit back and watch a cartoon. So
yeah,
who knows? Like, I was 100% in the mood for it, and I really enjoyed myself. I honestly do think, like, if you like cartoons, yeah, go see it. And don't be worried about the furry thing, because, like, it never tries to even... It never even tries for, like, the animators think you don't know that they're furries. Like, it doesn't do that, like, wink, wink, hey, furry.
There is a deliberately sexy character, but it's a Shakira character, so...
That character is... Okay. To say that that's deliberate... To say that that is sexy... It's a goo. That character looks like a Gary Larson character.
It does, but like they do
most.
Focus
in
on
fact, Gary Larson is
the...
Gary Larson is pretty. Seems like the model for a lot.
I will say the only scene that jumps out is trying to be deliberately sexy, but not in a creepy way. It's just because this is a pop star and that's what they do.
All right, you and I are going to agree to disagree on this.
The last scene is
we're going to agree to disagree on this.
Well, anyway, regardless, I should clarify, like, I am thinking too hard about the movie. Like, you're like, oh, it's too easy. No, I'm thinking too hard about it, but that's just what I do. Like,
what do you mean? You thinking too much and too hard about a cartoon?
It's a totally nice little movie. I just think too hard about it because it's like, oh, well, I can see that they were trying to do some of this other stuff here.
Well, okay. So, speaking of cartoons that you're supposed to think too much about, you just reviewed, and it just went up on the site, the Psycho Pass movie, which is pretty anticipated, I would say. You know, that show is very popular.
Right.
Which I still haven't seen. We're going to watch it for the show pretty soon, sometime in the next 6 months. Mm-hmm. How was it? The Gennaro Bucci's back, right? He's writing again, not like the second season. Yeah.
It is the least subtle thing Gennaro Bucci has ever written.
That's saying something.
It is, and well, I mean, I thought Psycho Pass was the least subtle thing he'd ever written, but the movie puts the series to shame with how deliberate it is with its message, and that's good because I like the message and I agree with it, so it's good for me. But I don't know how people are going to feel about it. It's very politically loaded, very like intensely politically loaded. But but at the same time, like it is the plot of a really good episode of the show, and the way the show is structured, every case is two episodes, so it's like, you know, 40, it's like a procedural, it's 40 to 50 minutes. So this was 40 to 50 minutes of story, and they stretch it to 2 hours, and you can feel the stretch. Like, they fill that time with the worst things about Psycho Pass, and the things that make it pale a little bit compared to some of the other stuff he's written, which is the excess. Like, the excess is fun, don't get me wrong, watching people get blown up and stuff like that, and the sex and violence and insanity and, like, sci-fi. This was in Blade Runner, oh yes, we know. Like, all that stuff is fun, but it is also, it does hurt the show's attempt to say something more serious. And it's saying something more serious all the time. So it has always existed in perpetuity. So the movie is just like a blown up version of that, where it's like it is more ridiculous than the show, and it is more deliberate in saying something very serious and very powerful. So those things are a little bit in conflict, but it's enjoyable. Like, if you're a fan of Psycho Pass, absolutely see it. If you skipped the second season because you heard things, you don't need to have seen the second season to understand this movie at all. So they were written at the same time. They have nothing to do with one another, except that the new characters, because of chronology, the new characters that were introduced in the second season are in the movie, but they don't do anything. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So you could just watch the first season and skip the crappy second season. Well, according to you, crappy second season.
There are people who love it.
People who liked it a lot.
It's awful.
Yeah, I don't want to tell tales. I haven't seen it. I can't tell tales out of school. You can go straight to this movie. And it's dubbed. You watched it dubbed.
Yeah,
and you're sort of lukewarm on the Psycho Pass dub, I think. That's one of those, like, personal choice, like...
Yeah, it's not bad or anything. It's the same as the show. If you've seen the dub for the TV series and you liked it, then you'll like the one for the movie. It's the same. The new cast additions don't really... You know, Psycho Pass is a cold world, so it's more of that. But... I'm not crazy about the dub, but it's serviceable. It's not like bad or anything. So the only thing it erases from the movie is I had to look into this to make sure, but the and it's not as clear in the English dub, but like the Shambhala soldiers and the basically the people who kind of form the government speak English, specifically English, and you hear like Vietnamese and whatever the native language of Cambodia, the Khmer is. I can't even say anything without pronouncing it wrong, probably. But like you hear that, and then you hear Japanese, and then you hear English and stuff like that back and forth, apparently throughout the movie. But in the dub, it's just English the whole time, so that subtlety is lost. That's all there is to it. But honestly, like subtlety, the movie subtlety, no. Like it's already extremely blatant about what it wants to say. So little bits of subtlety like that, not a big deal.
How's the animation?
It's good. It's not outstanding, but it's better than the show, and the show already looked good, so it looks like a theatrical anime movie, but it's not like gonna drop your jaw off.
So production IG theatrical quality, but not like innocence.
Yes, okay. It's not stunning, but it's good looking.
Not like the most ambitious thing they've ever tried. No, okay,
it's a nice looking IG joint.
Ghost in the Shell Innocence. You know, Psycho Pass seems like it is. I want to watch it because I've become. As I've grown older, I think terminally bored with Ghost in the Shell. I'm not trying to be mean or uncharitable. I just, you know what? Those characters have never fully grabbed me. I like Innocence a lot because it's so weird. Yeah. Like, it's such a weird movie. Mm-hmm. And the first Ghost in the Shell is like a masterpiece of tone
and
aesthetic. Mm-hmm. Story-wise, to sleep.
Right.
To sleep. Like, right. It is a total nap. Uh-huh. Psycho Pass, I feel like, will hook me more just because of what it's about. Like, when you and you, I've read you and Gabo talk about it, mm-hmm. and every time it's like, oh, this seems like it would totally be up my alley. Because, mm-hmm. like, it has to be about feelings.
Right.
It has to be about feelings.
It is absolutely.
Because if it's because if it's about robots, uh-huh. it has to be about robots and feelings.
Right.
Ghost in the Shell is so devoid of feelings, mm-hmm. even though it is ostensibly about feelings at certain points, you know.
Right.
And it asks the questions, you know, but it never gets into it, really.
Yeah. No, it, Psycho Pass, I mean, it was...
I mean, it does in its own Ghost in the Shell way. Does what I'm saying make sense?
Yeah, no, I get it. Psycho Pass, like, it is... Like, that is the reason that some people do reject it. It is a... Like, Pat Labor doesn't have that same coldness to it, but IG wanted a new Pat Labor, a new Ghost in the Shell, and they said, okay, well, that was deliberate to make a new thing like that.
But, yeah.
So Urobuchi's, he has a weird combination of, like, he wants to talk about feelings and only feelings, but he has a cold way of speaking, so it maintains that Ghost in the Shell tone that they want, which is very self-serious and bureaucratic, and everybody's kind of a genius and something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it is absolutely about, like, nasty, gut-wrenching inequalities and things that are wrong with society.
I mean, let me put it to you this way. Ghost in the Shell is, I obviously acknowledge it as, like, a really important film, certainly a masterpiece on some levels. And I like that movie a lot, of course. I don't want a bunch of that.
Right.
Like, I don't want, like, an entire TV show, mm-hmm. You know, 48 episodes plus three more movies plus a movie. Like, I'm okay with that, but not in that kind of quantity. Mm-hmm. Psycho Pass seems like it is combining that sort of thing with enough emotion to pull me in.
Right.
Because it's just too cold otherwise.
Yeah, Psycho Pass is also really weird in that it's a franchise that, usually, so you either have something like Ghost in the Shell where you can make more stories forever, or you have something that's building to, like, a climax, like in a classic sci-fi novel where the system has been to break or whatever. Psycho Pass does both of those. It's like it builds to a, like, okay, now we know that this is bad and we have to take it down. And then it goes, so what?
Yeah.
And after that, it's more episodic adventures where they talk about some of more of the same issues, but it's like people who already know they're living in a corrupt society and they can't do anything about it, which is interesting. You just don't see that very often.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well, I'm excited to finally sit down and watch it. I mean, certainly I've heard you talk about it forever.
right, yeah.
So to the main topic for today's show, and in terms of anime I've been watching From the New World, and I'm not going to talk about it because we're going to talk about it like in 2 weeks, I think. Next week we have an interview. And then 2 weeks, we should be doing the From the New World show. So we'll see. Cool. So we were going to talk a little bit about criticism this time, just to have a topic. And most of our Twitter questions questions are related to that. But before we get straight into the Twitter questions, I wanted to talk a little bit about sort of what we individually look for in a review. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have to sort of approach this from two perspectives. One is Anime News Network's editorial policy, mm-hmm. and then the other is what I personally like. Mm-hmm. And, the, you know, believe it or not, these two things are not one-to-one.
Right, right.
You know, I have to consider the needs of ANN's audience when I'm making decisions for ANN's editorial policy. Mm-hmm. But what I personally want is, you know, is often reflected in what ANN publishes, but not all the time. And I've been asked several times, like, hey, so what do you want? Like, who do you read? Mm-hmm. For things like film criticism, and I'm curious, like, what? So, in terms of when you, Jacob, go looking, I want to read an opinion about a movie uh-huh. or an anime. Uh-huh. What do you look for? Like, what exactly do you want that review to communicate to you?
Two things. I when I look at a review, I want to be able to tell the feelings, the taste, and the mode of expression and the values of the person who wrote it. So they have to be a good enough writer to where I can understand their voice and their perspective. Even if it's completely different from mine, so long as I understand where they're coming from and it doesn't read too vague or not specific enough, not passionate enough. You know, it needs to be like passionate and direct and like honest. And so I feel like I'm getting to know the person, even if I completely disagree with them. And then secondly is the thing that comes from that, which is the ability to apply that to my own tastes and go, okay, well, I like this or not based on what this person said. So that somebody could be completely trashing something and I could look at their review and it's valuable for me going, oh, I would like this. Or the reverse, somebody could say something's great and I look at why they say it's great and I'm like, and I think about who they are as a reviewer and then I go, oh, that might not be for me. So what I want is, regardless, I don't want somebody that I just fundamentally agree with, but I want somebody who expresses himself in a way that I can, I guess, learn something or understand whether or not something is for me or not, you know, I guess.
Right, yeah. I think, like, well, obviously, like, over time, what I want from a review has changed a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, I used to want, like, something comprehensive. Uh-huh. I think something comprehensive, authoritative, something that was like, this movie is this, mm-hmm. you know, sort of the Roger Ebert, you know, style.
Right.
It's general. It's comprehensive. It's very authoritative. It's monolithic. It presents itself as monolithic. And over time, I think that my attitude about that has changed. Now I want what I want to know is, what did this movie make you feel and what did you personally appreciate about it mm-hmm. or not appreciate about it the most?
Right.
Because what we have is a pantheon, an endless array of writers, right? Mm-hmm. And I can get bits and pieces from each one, and I'm going to read more than one review. Mm-hmm. So what I do is I try to find people, and honestly, like, if I were to throw out names right now, I would say I can't, like, throw out any film critics that I really, really love, because a lot of the ones that I was reading have sort of moved on to other pastures or aren't writing as much anymore. And I'm in the process of going through a lot of different movie sites and trying to find individual names. But I still check, you know, I still just look at Rotten Tomatoes and read, you know, the New York Times and check the AV Club. And mm-hmm. occasionally I check Birth, Movies, Death still and, you know, stuff like that. What I want is, like, well, okay, so this writer really likes this kind of thing. He's into that. I know he likes old horror movies. I know he preferred... Return of the Jedi to any of the other Star Wars movies. You know, you figure out that person's little peccadillos, and then if you want that perspective, like, I'll seek out that guy's perspective on that. Mm-hmm. Or that site's perspective on that. Like, if a site has an editor that's guiding their editorial in a certain direction,
right.
and I like that direction that they're going. But I don't need that review to be the be-all, end-all. I no longer need it to be comprehensive. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to tell me everything about the film. Mm-hmm. Unless I'm reading the review after the fact, unless I'm reading it afterwards.
Right.
And I tend to read reviews after I've seen a film, way more often now. Mm-hmm. But what I do want, I guess what this all boils down to is I want a personal experience. Mm-hmm. I want to know how you, a person, felt about this piece of art that you saw. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, what's interesting about it?
Right.
You know, like, anyone can look at a ball and say, it's a ball. Mm-hmm. But how did the ball make you feel? Mm-hmm. Like, what? You're a complex person who contains multitudes. What did this series of inputs do to your brain? Articulate that to me, and it'll tell me maybe a little bit about how my brain might respond to it. You know, like,
yeah.
A deeply personal experience. I feel like that is more what I want now, and thank God, because that's definitely what the internet has turned criticism into, for the most part. Mm-hmm. So that's where I've kind of fallen down, and you may notice ANN's editorial is moving slowly, drifting a little bit more in that direction where it's more personal. Like, I instructed the writers to start using I, you know, a lot more often, and to speak how they, you know, speak personally. Like, it is your opinion. I feel like a big part of the reason that you get so many people in the forums and people on Twitter and wherever, across any site that reviews any kind of media whatsoever, well, you don't know anything, and like this critics, blah, blah, like, you know, you think you that stuff. If the opinion presented is, hey, here's what I think, also this happened to me, and so I reacted to this way in this film, you know, this event in this film made me think about this thing, it was especially potent, and I feel like they pulled it off because I'm personally familiar with those feelings, and so, you know, that personal experience, it removes the concept that you are presenting this monolithic opinion from on high, and instead, you're just a talented writer that this site felt articulated themselves well enough to pay you to articulate yourself and start a discussion. So that's how I see it. Like, that is how I see it.
Yeah, that's a really revealing perspective.
That's a revealing perspective,
well,
huh?
I mean, like, I think that's what a lot of people want. I think it's very revealing about what people really want to. They want to feel understood when they read a review. They want somebody to speak to them about a piece of art that they feel like is understanding of what they want. You know,
yeah.
Like,
even if they don't, now that's what I want.
Yeah.
I'm just doing what I personally want.
Yeah, I think that's very
common enough, maybe.
Yeah.
Common enough, which is good, because what you hope is that you find a perspective that you're comfortable with that's common enough that people like it. You know, and we've seen that people are cool with what we've been doing, but that is definitely the approach that I personally like, and you know, like I said, ANN's editorial policy and what I personally like are not always one to one, but in that case, you know, that preference I think is bleeding through, and so far so good. I mean, I think it's been all right. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say, like, whoa, we don't, everything's great. Like, no, of course. There's mountains of improvement, of course, is always another hill to climb. So I get that a lot, and I felt like that was a way to articulate that. What I can tell you that I think that the market for the kind of very formal, very authoritative, comprehensive reviews, I feel like that is largely what's fading. When you're talking about,
people want analysis, but they want it after they've already seen the thing.
Yes.
Like, people want analysis after they've already come to love something. They want to understand why they love it.
Yeah.
Or why they hate it.
Yeah.
And that's where an in-depth analysis comes in. And people do want that to be authoritative because they want it to be researched. Because they don't want to, well, I feel that this is about this. Okay, well, somebody else can feel that this is about something else. Who did the research and who, like, did their best to get closest to what the author was thinking? Because that's, in, like, you know, if you believe in death of the author, who did the, like, sociology research that has the best understanding of what this means to other people, regardless of the author's intentions? That kind of stuff. So people prefer that analysis to be more authoritative. But when you're just talking about whether you like something or not, not why you did, people just want to hear a voice that they think is friendly and understanding and good to communicate with.
Right. Yeah. That's a big thing. And you do develop, you know, I feel like this is diminished in my life, but I know people do this. You develop a personal relationship with the critics that you read. And you understand them, and once you understand them, you understand their reading. And you know, that's one of the reasons that the preview guide is organized the way it is. Mm-hmm. It used to be organized by writer, because I figured people would be like, oh, I agree with Theron, so I'm going to click on Theron's reviews and read what Theron has to say. Or I like, you know, the 10 people that would say, I like sex, dumb jokes, and they click on my name and they get my perspective. One second. And, you know, and the idea was like, okay, well, so you only have to read the opinions that you want. Of course, it turns out people dramatically prefer it being organized by show because that just makes it easier to read in general.
They just want to flip down through it and see, like, what the average is.
Yeah, and it's fine. And totally happy to do things that way. And, you know, the preview guide only grew after we started doing that. But that was the thinking behind that early on, was like, okay, well, so if you just like Rebecca Silverman, here's all of Rebecca Silverman's opinions. You know, they're all in one place for you. And I feel like that is generally how people develop relationships with critics. But that is generally what I look for. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Anything to add?
No, I think you've got it pretty well covered.
Cool. All right. Well, so our Twitter questions largely deal with this. So let's go ahead. This is largely, you know, mostly a Twitter episode anyway. So we're going to go ahead and get to these Twitter questions. All right. Well, before we get to these Twitter questions, we do have to talk about the best place to get classic anime on DVD. Do you have an idea of what I'm talking about?
Please, Zach, tell me more.
Well, we got to talk a little bit about RightStuffAnime.com, which is also home to the releases of Nozomi Entertainment, which you're familiar with this.
I believe this company. I have heard of that.
I mean, you've heard of shows like Utena, Rose of Versailles.
I love those, yeah.
You know, The Irresponsible Captain Tyler. Like, these are classics, right? Classics. And the best place to still get them in handsome and convenient, attractive, and reasonably priced box sets. Believe it or not, RightStuffAnime.com.
Fancy that.
I know, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I told you, like, shipping is free, but you have to order over a certain amount, like, what would you say that amount would be?
Maybe $80?
No. Would you believe $49?
Wow.
You spend $49, which frankly...
Yeah, that's one anime thing.
That's like one anime.
Yeah.
Right? That's one anime, and you get a lot of anime for that price.
Yeah.
Right? But that's one anime, comes to you free, $49, that's it. That's all you gotta spend. And you're talking about classics. I mean, Revolutionary Girl Lieutenant changed lives, man.
It did.
Changed lives.
Changed a lot of lives.
Yeah. Anyway, RightStuffAnime.com, that's the place. Classic anime, affordable box sets, free shipping over $49. You can't go wrong. All right, let's go ahead and get to these Twitter questions. Okay. Incompetent Crit asks, what causes a series to either age poorly or well? Well, geez, I don't know if there's like, well, one thing.
Yeah, it's any number of factors.
I think, you know, honestly, I think social attitudes are a thing. That's definitely a thing. Technology doesn't bother me so much. Like, I know people who get really... really worked up about technology. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, they there's no cell phones. I can't take this movie seriously. Like, you know, there was a time before cell phones.
Yeah.
This movie is set before a cell phone.
I enjoy that. I feel like cell phones have actually ruined a lot of... they've opened too many plot holes in a lot of recent movies.
Well, you're saying that as someone who's writing a horror game.
But I,
horror being the genre.
80s, yeah. Like, I said it in the 80s so we wouldn't have cell phone problems.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
That's not the reason, but yeah.
Horror as a genre was hit hardest by the cell phone.
Absolutely. No bars, mysteriously.
Yeah, now it's no bars. Yes. No coverage. Everything's got to take place out in the middle of nowhere. But, I, you know, honestly, that I guess that sort of answers that question. That's different for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, really, really junky 90s animation, like Trigun, it's an impediment for me.
Right.
To me, that's aging poorly. Because yesterday's really shitty TV animation, but was, you know, tolerably shitty, is like today's barely tolerable.
I would say, yeah, I know, shitty animation, like, it does bother me, but I don't... I don't know. It depends. Like, if the story's good, I can look past it. To me, what ages something poorly the most is, like, weird bad attitudes about how society or people work and humor that doesn't work anymore. Like, if something's supposed to be a comedy or just supposed to have large portions of comedy and it's not funny anymore because it was based in, like, some reference that nobody gives a crap about anymore... that, like, is a death knell. Like, I think Excel Saga is really difficult to watch now.
Yeah,
because that entire breed of comedy, the joke is that you kind of want to die because they're screeching at you so hard, like, which was just a viable form of comedy, certainly in anime, like, is so out of vogue now that, like, the jokes, then there are jokes in Excel Saga with setups and punchlines. They're kind of still funny, but the execution of it where the idea is just to scream at you as hard as possible so that you're kind of, like, uncomfortable laughing because it's so, like, intentionally off-putting, that is completely gone out of style. Now it's all about, like, cute, appealing comedy. Like, even looking at Mr. Osamatsu, like, Mr. Osamatsu is, like, a cute version of, like, gross-out stuff. Excel Saga is just so dated now that it's interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think that's different for everybody. Really, like, references, like, you know, when a character says, like, hey, these are the 80s, you know, like, yeah. That kind of thing. That's kind of funny. It takes you out of it, for sure. Or when somebody refers to, like, you know, President Bill Clinton, you know, and they, you know, and it's clearly 1996. yeah, that's a little, you know, or someone makes, like, a political joke about the climate at the time.
Yeah.
Expecting you to just, yeah, things sure are like that right now, you know, but they're not at all. So, anyway, moving on. Just Some Account asks, what aspects do you personally feel you could take more into account or improve in your criticisms? So, how could we be better critics?
I write too many multi-phrase run-on sentences, even today. Like, I've cut them down a lot, but I am really fond of parentheticals and extra phrases in long sentences because I really want to be specific. Like, that is, I think one of my strengths is that I'm very good at being specific without using too many words, but I still have to use a lot, and I want to get very specific when I talk about art. So, because I don't want to be misunderstood or made to feel like I didn't look into it deeply enough. But that leads to long, long
answers. Yeah, everything's really long.
And brevity, I guess.
As your editor.
Brevity.
Brevity, I would say. You are not particularly concise.
No.
And that's fine, but speaking as your editor.
I don't talk about nothing.
Yep.
I like to think that I don't waste sentences. I don't talk about nothing. I talk about too much stuff. In a general sense.
Well, I think that's one of those things where you've always wanted to just get out as much as you could.
Right.
Like, you want to say everything I have to say about this in this piece. Really love run-on sentences. Really love run-on sentences and adjective strings. Those are big favorites of mine. Mm-hmm. But that's maybe just my style at this point. There's a ton of stuff I could improve. I need to write way more criticism. I do not generally consider effective escapism to be something to praise in a thing. Like, if something's effective escapism, then okay, cool, but B minus or whatever.
Right.
I'm not sure if I'm ever going to be the kind of person who's like, well, this sure made me forget about my problems for 2 hours, so A minus. I don't know that I can do that. But I do feel like I could open up a little bit more to giving something a high score just because it was just fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe a higher score than you might expect. But like, well, I just enjoyed this.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I feel like just fun. You know, I don't want to be the guy who gives stuff A minuses because it was neat or, you know, I laughed once. You know, like that's... You know, the high score has to mean something. That's why. Because it needs to mean something. You know, it can't just be like, I give a B plus to everything. You know, like, you can't do that.
Yeah, I think I have a bias against pleasance as well. I'm totally down with giving
that
something.
That sounds awful. Like, that sounds like you know, what, you don't like fun? I love fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that unless something is more than just fun, it's going to get, like, a B. But if something's super fun, I feel like I owe it... it's like fun should be just as important as, I don't know, a really strong ending or...
Well, here's my caveat to that is when I said pleasance, I don't mean fun. I do mean like pleasance. And I think that you have this trait as well where you do reward fun. You do like, okay, I can give an A to this just purely because it was fun, like a red line sort of thing. If it is...
That fun.
Yeah, if it's fun in an exciting way.
Yeah.
Like, pleasance is purposefully not exciting, and it is a large portion of anime. Like, there's a large portion of anime that exists not to say anything deep or to like high octane, you know, pump you up, but to put you in a state of like pleasant meditation and like appeasement. And that's fine, but I'm personally not going to give it an A, like, and that is a bias that I have to work against because maybe not work against, but like not give me that material, like give that to somebody else to review because I totally give an A to something if it's high octane fun that is trying to, like, trying to be fun and succeeding. But if it's trying to be pleasant and succeeding flying colors, like, it's still, like, a B plus. Because a mellow emotion is not a superlative to me. Like,
I gotcha.
Superlative is a heightened emotion. It's not a mellow emotion.
Yeah, I guess, you know, B plus is a B plus, kind of no matter how you cut it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, yeah, you know what? No, I think that's valid. Mm-hmm. A means I was excited.
Yeah.
And B means I was having a good time. Mm-hmm. But A means I was excited.
Right.
I think that's a good line. Mm-hmm. That's a good line, I think. It doesn't necessarily mean you're, like, punishing something for just being that. Mm-hmm. But, like, someone else can think that, like, I can say, like, yeah, it was just fun. And someone else goes, yeah, but it was really fun. Like, okay, well, you think then that you would have given it an A-, but I would give it a B+.
And somebody else's pleasance.
This is my personal, yeah, someone else's pleasance is another man's extra fun.
Excitement. Or somebody else's excitement, in our case, is with other people.
See, it all, yeah.
Is somebody else's discomfort. Like, it can be, like, actively uncomfortable.
Yeah, it all just comes back to individual experiences.
Yeah, absolutely.
You try and empathize with the writer while you're reading his opinion, his or her opinion, and then you really understand what they're trying to say. Wakashi AOT asks, how do you feel about reviews from seasoned or cynical anime fans versus newer fans who haven't been beaten down by tropes, etc.? Well, you know what? So this is interesting. Like, I think both perspectives are valuable. As a seasoned, older, somewhat cynical anime fan, I'm going to personally read people who mirror my experience. If someone's never seen has been into anime for a year, and they're reviewing anime, and they're like, wow, at basically everything, mm-hmm. that person doesn't have much to offer me personally. It's not a criticism of them, but they don't have that much to offer me as a reader, because I'm looking for somebody who's not, can you believe a magic high school? Like, it's totally awesome to be excited by that stuff. And everyone goes through a phase where they're excited by that stuff. And that review is valuable to people who are in that phase. Mm-hmm. But it's not particularly valuable to me. So I think that this is one of those things where I think it is valuable to have both voices. However, oftentimes people who have only been into anime for about a year or two are not also professional writers. So you don't really see a lot not a lot of writing from that crowd. Mm-hmm. But anyway, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, like, if somebody's just now watching anime and they're like, oh, this totally forgettable show, I'll give it a B because I've seen 5 shows. Like, you know, it's good. They're getting their chops wet, and people should absolutely, like, start writing about this stuff if they care about it, to learn more about it, to explore themselves as a writer. But it's not personally valuable to me because I've been watching anime for, like, almost 2 decades, so, you know.
Right. Okay, Nintendoxen asks, how do y'all feel about the criticism from some old fans that all anime sucks now? Okay, I'm going to translate all anime sucks now for you. Here is the translation. Mm-hmm. I'm burned out and need to take a break or walk away from the hobby. That's what that means. You translate that into that, and you will understand the real meaning every time.
Also, I watched 2 shows a year in the 90s, and it was great. I watch 12 shows a year now, and it is not as good. Like, that's the other, you know, like, probable cause there that I've noticed.
Yeah, or specifically the kinds of things, they made a very specific kind of thing in the 80s or the 90s mm-hmm. that has since fallen out of popularity. They do not make it anymore, and that's the number one thing I liked about anime, and so I'm out of anime right now.
Right, yeah.
Like, it is never that anime actually sucks now.
No.
That's never the case.
It sucks now as much as it sucked then, and it is good now as much as it was good then. Like, looking at the swath of things that were released in that year.
Well, no, by virtue of just there being so much more of it.
Yes, absolutely.
That, granted, you know, the pendulum,
the same,
let me finish. The pendulum swing is just much more intense.
Yeah.
But that's just because there's so much of it, mm-hmm. right? Okay. Let's say, Full Metal Naro asks, what do you say to people who claim that you shouldn't judge animation unless you yourself are an animator? Well, I can say that there are people out there who only want the perspective of somebody who is literally an animator themselves, and I invite them to go read writing by people who are literally animators. Mm-hmm. And you go find that writing and read it and enjoy it. That's all I have to say to that.
Yeah. I mean, on the other end of it, like, do you have to be an actor to understand when you see bad acting? Do you have to be...
For some people, I would imagine you would. I invite those people to go find that writing.
Yeah, do you have to be a writer to look at bad writing and go, oh, this person can't write? I don't think so.
Yeah. No. Do you have to be a critic to think that some criticism is bad?
No.
No, you don't.
Yep. So, yeah, that's my take on it, but I think it's more educational to have an animator's perspective on it, but I think, like...
Oh, I want to read that article. Mm-hmm. I just also want to read the guy who doesn't know much about animation but articulates himself really, really well about it.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Let's see. You know, having technical knowledge is always important.
Yeah.
It is always valuable. It's just that technical knowledge... When you were talking about how did this movie make you feel, mm-hmm. is part of that, mm-hmm. not the whole equation.
Yeah, and
I think.
Yeah, you can see is animation effective? Animation is kind of acting, and is animation effective or is it not? Is kind of just a human response more than it is a technical, like, oh well, the technical is figuring out how and why it made you feel a certain way, but like. Whether it's bad or successful or not, like, that's A, personal taste to some extent, and B, like, kind of an innate human response to whether it works or not. So, yeah.
Right. PavoKiller8 asks, has work being overrated or underrated ever affected your overall opinion or enjoyment of said work? If so, why? My overall opinion, so overrated and underrated, I don't want to get into that conversation again. I don't really like either of those words. I think those words are sort of narcissistic, right? Overrated, that suggests everyone's wrong and you're here to tell everyone what the real opinion is, right?
Yeah, it's not a state. Overrated and underrated aren't a statement of...
fact.
Well, they're not even a statement of quality to the work itself. When you're talking about overrated and underrated, you're not talking about the work as it exists. You're talking about other people's reactions and whether you think those are good or bad. You're not if something is overrated or underrated, it's not about how good or bad the movie is. It's just how good or bad you think other people's reaction to the movie is. So I think it kind of belongs outside of criticism. It belongs in, like, you know, it belongs when you're talking to your friends and stuff like that. But as critical terms, like, they're really not very useful at all. I don't like them.
Right. Yeah. Let's see here. Wait, I didn't really answer that question. No, I don't go into things with... Everyone says this is great, so it better be great. Mm-hmm. I try not to. Let me rephrase that. I try not to let it affect me. That doesn't mean it never does. Right, I just try really hard not to let it affect me. Yeah. If everyone goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on about something, that likely will kind of irritate me a little bit because that's just the kind of person I am. Mm-hmm. But I try not to take that with me into the show. I try not to. Doesn't mean I always succeed.
Right.
But when it comes to, like, anime, I go out of my way to do it. Because that's really important, I think. Especially, like, this is my job. So yeah. I should go in without, like, overrated, underrated, whatever. I'm just going to watch it, take it on its own as a piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, TV's stuff I watch casually, like, you know, for my own enjoyment. You know, the hype around Zootopia did not factor into, you know, the hype around Star Wars didn't really, I just wanted it to be good, you know, and then it was. So, you know, I don't know. Let's see. Bassman PhD asks, how important is it for anime critics to be especially fluent in anime or film, anime and film history and theory with regards to their writing? So, why don't you go ahead?
Depends on your audience. I think, like, if you are writing for an audience that cares about film theory and is gonna, like, want to hear you break down, it's, you know, it's a why thing again. Like, it's like an animator, like, an animator's criticism of an animated work is valuable because it is telling you why something did or didn't work rather than just that it did or didn't. But, like, in film theory is the same way. It's telling you, okay, this is how it gets this message across. This is why this scene is scary, etc. Like, and it's valuable and it's really cool, but it's not necessary to be able to form an articulate opinion that speaks to people. Like, it's not necessary. It's just helpful. Like, absolutely do whatever you can to learn about the craft that you're criticizing. Like, I think that's really important,
mm-hmm.
but it's not like a prerequisite for having an opinion that's worth anything or whatever the heck. So, you know.
The only time I think it trips you up is when someone complains about something in a film and they're complaining because they are ignorant of the technique. Or they don't know that that's a common thing. That they just don't like it. Mm-hmm. But they're complaining about it being, like, technically incompetent or something like that. And that's just a technique that they don't personally like, but they don't know the technique. Mm-hmm. So they think it's just wrong somehow.
Right.
Like, that's when that stuff trips you up. And also, I have found, because I come from that background, like, that's what my worthless bachelor's degree is in, mm-hmm. is film theory. Mm-hmm. I care about that. I want that in my writing. And I can recognize it when someone does not have a background in film theory or film history when they're writing anime reviews. I can mm-hmm. tell usually right away. Like, it's yeah. it's pretty good. If you know this stuff like the back of your hand, you can tell right away. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's an absolute requirement. However, I have found that, you know, knowledge of filmic techniques, knowledge of film language,
yeah.
a knowledge of film history, knowing where things came from and stuff. Yeah, super helpful. Can't hurt. Like, if you want to write about anime, man, just read a couple books about, you know, film theory. Mm-hmm. It'll probably do you some good. Everyone can always stand to learn more, right?
Right.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. That's a good way of looking at it. Everybody can stand to learn more, especially.
Like, I should spend some time doing a lot more very in-depth technical reading about the process of animation, specifically as it relates to the anime industry. Mm-hmm. I should. I know a lot about that already, but not as much as I should. So, you know, everyone's got holes, and they want to patch those holes up. I think a well-rounded critic is always trying to learn.
Yeah, absolutely.
Always
from
trying
other
to learn.
People, from not yeah. just learning the craft in a technical sense, but also like a lot of critics write to learn what other people think of stuff. Like they write to connect with other perspectives that are different from their own. Like that's part of what being a critic is about, is not just here's my opinion, now like absorb it, you all, like you listen to the you all, like you listen to
you try to yeah,
yeah. Like, you do try. Your best. You do your best. That's yeah. that's part of becoming a stronger critic.
Absolutely. All right, I like this question a lot. Dean of Nothing asks, if you could go back in time and give advice to your younger critic self, what would you say? Woo. Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, I'll try and keep the list short. Mm-hmm. But I would say, I'm being honest here, don't limit yourself by thinking that negativity equals honesty, because it doesn't, and that's limiting. And it also, you fall into a trap where your audience expects you to be hard on things, and so subconsciously, you're hard on things, because you know the audience expects that, right? Doesn't mean your opinion is dishonest, but after the fact, if you look back in hindsight, you can realize, oh, you know, I was kind of hitting stuff harder than I needed to, largely because, I didn't have enough nuance in my communication. I wasn't kind enough in my communication about the stuff. Like, I've learned a lot about communicating over the years in this job, and that is the biggest thing. If I could go back, I would tell myself and say, it's okay to be enthusiastic and positive. And you're not compromising anything by doing that. You know, you're not you're not just an advertisement if you are just positive. Like, it's okay. You just have to communicate specifically. You have to be careful with your words, and don't limit your audience by suggesting, you know. Basically, there is almost never, ever, 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 ever a good reason to criticize the audience of something in a review of a thing itself.
Right.
Never, ever. Don't ever do it.
Kind of calling back to that overrated, underrated thing. It's like, are you talking about the work, or are you talking about how you feel about the audience?
Yes. Yeah. This is the biggest mistake that I ever made, was talking shit about the audience. It's not my place, and was never my place, to judge the audience of a show, to cast judgment on them. If I could go back in time and apologize personally to every single person who ever felt judged by me because I was a dick about the show that they liked, in a way that made them feel personally, like, and my words were like, the people who like this, blah, blah. Man, I would go back in time and say, hey, Zach, fuck you. Fuck you. Figure out a different way to say that without being an asshole. That's what I would say. I feel very strongly about it. Just wanted to express that.
Okay, wow. All right. Well, I would say, if I could go back my younger critic self and give advice, I would say you don't have to... this is actually a problem I still have, but it was worse in the past, which is, like, you don't have to take yourself and others' reactions to what you're going to say so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be like, I have feelings sometimes, like, why do I even bother talking about this unless I have something new to say, unless I have something, like... So there's a lot of stuff that I just don't talk about, like, I digest, but I just don't talk about because I don't feel like I have anything new to add, or I feel like I won't be thorough enough and people will misunderstand me. And I... absolutely, that was a huge problem with... and I think it's allowed me to develop a style that is extremely thorough and specific and direct, but at the same time, like, it takes a long time for me to write stuff, and it used to take even longer, and it's just like, don't take yourself so seriously. It's okay. People are not gonna, like, remember this forever if you do screw it up, and just don't, you know, like, it's okay to just sort of casually share opinions, and now I do that, like, on Twitter all the time. It's like, casually, I didn't used to do this, but I just casually... share opinions about little things, and I try not to sweat it too much. And I think it helps now that I'm a happier person, so I don't have to worry about my, like, casual barbs or casual comments about stuff being as, like, potentially potboilery as they could have been in the past when I was, like, way more miserable. So there's that. I would just go back in time and say, hey, unclench. Don't take yourself so seriously. It's okay.
See, we're doing some important work here today.
Yeah.
Getting some feelings out. Anyway, last question. Invalid Name asks, do mainstream TV critique sites ignore anime because there's too much, like the AV Club, ignore anime because there's just too much of it to get a handle on it? I could not, like, having being not a fly on the wall in their editorial department, I cannot tell you why they don't cover it.
Right.
I can tell you that largely anime is its own audience.
Mm-hmm.
And specialized coverage, the reason it exists on... the reason a site like Anime News Network can exist is because there is a niche audience specifically for that.
Mm-hmm.
It is likely not in the AV Club's best interest to do the kind of... like, if they just started doing everything we do, they would have to spend the kind of money that we spend producing it.
Right.
Hire the people that, you know... you'd have to bring in an entire new editorial staff... to cover it. I mean, daily streaming reviews requires something like 12 people or so to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a small task.
Right.
So yeah, those are big jobs. And like, yeah, like I said, that's a niche audience. That's like, you know, they don't go in depth on American animation either. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't cover everything on Cartoon Network, or they only cover the few things that seem to be breaking out a little bit.
Right.
You know, it was weird to me that they didn't do week to week on Space Dandy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt like that belonged along with their coverage of Rick and Morty and and whatever else.
Yeah. I mean, there is, I feel like mostly it's just a niche argument where it's like, oh, that is of a specific, like, it's kind of like there's an audience for, like, long running soap operas or whatever, but you don't necessarily cover that on a general TV. Like, AV Club is picks the most, like, culturally impactful to large-scale America stuff to cover, and then, like, cable stuff that has a specific, like, TV-loving audience. Anime is its own, like, its own crew. So it's, like, gamers, anime fans, etc. Like, it's just this separate circle, so.
Yeah. Interesting. It's interesting to watch, and I wonder, moving forward, if now that we're seeing the participation of places like Netflix and stuff like that, if we're going to start seeing anime growing in popular culture... to where it is, you know, more of a presence on mainstream sites like that.
Right. It's definitely had more, like, anime has had way more impact on the production, like, the production, I guess I want to say, style and tone of American animation in the last, like, 8 years or so, like, amazingly more. Like, it used to be, like, 1 in 10 shows had an anime influence, and now it's, like, half American animated TV shows have some sort of, like, distinct, oh, this is an anime reference.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like, that's just going to continue.
Yeah, they'll use, like, sweat drops and stuff
exactly.
Like that. Yeah, totally. Okay, all right. Well, that was our last question. Let's go ahead and wrap up there. Hey, thanks. Thanks for coming on the show, Jacob.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here.
All right, then. Okay, that's our show. The theme song is Bucharest by the band New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating, a review. We'd really appreciate it. And we will see you all next week.